This program was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, Irirangi Tumotu, MPR.
G'day and welcome to Manawatu Metal, Metalheads Radio. Local, national and international news, interviews and the latest new releases brought to you by MPR, Manawatu People's Radio. G'day and welcome to Metalheads. This week we were lucky enough to talk with Steve from the band Windswept. We also chat with CJ from the band Drowning Pool, and we finish it all off with a chat with Tim King from Embryonic Autopsy. Windswept being a Wellington band, they're obviously playing a little bit locally, so make sure you get out and check them out. First off, we're going to play a track from them with a track, Cenote, and then we will have the interview with Steve. We're talking with Steve from the band Windswept. They've just released their debut album, Howling in Baptismal Filth, on May the 29th, a few days ago. You must be excited about that.
Yeah, very. It's been a pretty hectic couple of days, actually. The buzz, certainly online, has been huge. I've had so many pre-orders of physical media, so I've been packing records helter skelter for the last week, pretty much, since they turned up from the States. And yeah, it's all systems go, man.
Oh, mate, that's absolutely brilliant, mate. How did you celebrate?
Well, we got given 50 records and they're pretty much all gone. I'm just trying to hold some back. We've got a record release show on Friday at Over the Hill Records.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm just trying to hold some back, which is being challenging because they're all going. Luckily, the label Northern Void Records, who are based in the States, they're selling a bunch. So they're kind of taking the load off us with anyone from North America or kind of that side of the world. Although I have been shipping a bunch over there.
Wow, that's absolutely brilliant, mate. Getting New Zealand metal all across the globe.
Yeah, bro.
Man, fantastic. So you released the one single, C-Note, is that right?
It's Cenote. So, yeah, we released that with a video clip that premiered 2 weeks ago. Decibel Magazine premiered that for us, which was super cool. And it's a really cool, striking video, and it seems to have got a really good response. So, yeah.
And I watched the video. I thought it was pretty cool, mate. How much do you guys get involved in the making of that? Is it something that you get somebody in to come and do, or how much do you get involved with writing, the storyboard and carry on?
Well, that one's pretty much a performance video where, we're playing it. But yeah, I'm always super involved in the creative side of it. And obviously Rachel, as our front person, is also a very strong creative. And along with Amber Beaton, who filmed and directed the video, we kind of all put our two cents in. But I've also worked with Amber a great deal over the last 10 years in my other band Bullet Belt and now in Windswept, and I have great faith in her to kind of carry our vision forward and see it through.
Yeah, she does a great job and she definitely captures the spirit of the band, doesn't she?
Yeah, absolutely. It was actually a really fun, I wouldn't say it was a fun day, it was freezing, but we did it in the Rimutaka Trail, which is kind of north of Upper Hutt a little bit, and there was a Sunday afternoon and there were literally hundreds of people hiking past us as we were obviously with the music blasting for playthrough, and so yeah, it was pretty amusing afternoon.
What sort of reactions did you get? Did you get anybody come along and have a bit of a mosh?
Everyone was super supportive. We got lots of smiles and people would just stop and take photos. There was one dad and son where the dad put his hands over his son's eyes, so that was pretty funny.
Oh, that's absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, very cool.
Very cool, very cool. So the album cover art, who did that for you? Because normally with Bullet Belt, you've used a fairly similar artist.
This is a guy, his name is, his brand on Instagram is Dharma Art. So, yeah, I always just keep an eye out when I'm scrolling on Instagram. And if I see an artist that I, that is really striking and I like this stuff, I kind of just keep their contact and I keep them in mind. And I've seen some of his stuff and it's this really cool kind of sketchy, uses pen on paper and then puts the color on later. And I really dug his style. And I thought I actually got the idea for that based on, I don't know if you ever used to read 2000 AD comic.
Oh, yeah,
but
yeah.
There was this character called Slain. And when he would go into battle, it's this Irish legend, but he would go into this thing called Warp Spasm. And that's when he would go into this ultimate fighting mode and just be absolutely possessed and be able to beat like army. So that was kind of my vibe around the cover art. And he kind of took it and ran with it and yeah, made it look super sick.
It certainly does. It's pretty damn cool. So the writing and recording process, how did it work this time for you?
We're actually a reasonably new band. We've been going 2 years, which is pretty new still, but these are just the first, what have we got, eight songs? These are literally the first eight songs we wrote. Cenote was, I think, the first song we wrote, or maybe the second. So we're still, I guess, just working out who we are and what our sound is, and I think it's already evolved a little bit. And, so it's a real this band's a real classic songwriting style, whereas we do a lot of the songwriting in the band room. It was generally the music was me and Isaac and Finn, and just kind of fleshing out ideas in the band room and slowly starting with skeletons of songs. And they kind of evolved. And then as Rachel put her vocals on top, the songs just kept evolving. And, we recorded it July last year with James Goldsmith at the surgery studio here in Wellington. It was recorded very live, like the music minus the vocals is pretty much live. We just really wanted to keep it raw and very real and be the polar opposite to, a modern metal, which is, you know, very overproduced and lots of replacement sounds and et cetera. So it's kind of warts and all. And I think it really works for this album. You can feel the energy, and you can, you know, it's human. It moves a little bit. It's not 100% perfect, and we didn't want it to be. We wanted it to be real and really full of piss and vinegar.
Yeah. So, I mean, basically you're saying you recorded analog rather than digital?
Well, it's, you know, it's a digital studio, so it's still recorded to Pro
Yeah.
Tools, but we pretty much played live. So what you're hearing musically, minus the vocals, is pretty much live, and maybe just a little bit of touching up here and there, very minor. Maybe an extra guitar. I think we put an extra couple of the guitarist laid tracks again on top. But yeah, the songs were pretty much played two or three times live, and we kind of took the best take, and there, we didn't want to overthink it. We wanted to keep it very very real, and we wanted to really keep that live kind of feel, which is what this band is about.
Yeah. So how does the music come to you? I mean, when you're thinking of creating music, is it something where you just hear drum beats, or do you hear guitars and everything all together, or how do you hear music?
Well, that's a very broad question. I guess for this band, I was very inspired by the second wave of black metal, especially the drumming kind of style and keeping it very primitive, you know, like your early Dark Thrones and Satyricons and that kind of vibe. That's really the vibe that we wanted to take. And I'm the oldest in the band, and I kind of lived that period. The rest of them probably, I don't even think they were born then. Well, they were very young, you know. No, actually, none of them were born in 92. What am I talking about? They were all. So for me, it's been a little bit of not guiding them, but being the one in the band who's been able to say, that's great, but it doesn't really fit the vibe of what we're trying to achieve here. Trying to keep it a little bit more real and true to that old school aesthetic of second wave black metal. But obviously, everyone in the band comes from a different musical side of the fence, and they all bring something different. So that's kind of what's given made Windswept, I guess, sound a little bit unique and created a bit of a buzz. It's really a meshing of five different styles and five different ideas, and that's kind of yeah. I guess I've kind of swayed off your question there.
No, you basically covered what we were talking, where I was aiming for. So yeah, no, that's cool. So when you go to the studio, do you take your own kit in, like your own drum kit, or do you just use whatever house drum kit they have?
No. I use my big beautiful Ludwig kit for that. So it's 22 inch floor tom, big 16-18. 22 kick drum, 16 and 18 floor tom. So a real classic sounding drum, which was what this album needed. Big, deep sounding drums, basically.
Yeah. Do you have a favorite brand of sticks that you use?
I'm a 5B nylon tip, and they're bloody expensive these days. When I first started drumming, or even when I first started playing in bands, man, I used to break so many sticks. Because I used to think harder was better. Hard drums hit hard still sound great, but you kind of learn as you go through to be a little bit more technical on the way you're hitting, particularly the cymbals. That's how you break most of your sticks. So, you know, they're like $25 a pair or $30 these days. So, I'm a little bit more economical these days on my sticks.
Yeah, I can understand that. That's pretty pricey. Lyrical inspiration for the album. Did you get involved with writing the lyrics, or was that all Rachel?
Initially, the story with Rachel is Rachel comes from more of a crust punk background, grind, you know, and So it was really interesting getting her into the band. And I was certainly a little unsure of how it would go with her, because I have a very, with my other band, I write a lot of lyrics, and I have a very, I guess I have a little bit of a method to it. And just kind of letting her, as the front person, the singer, letting her write all the lyrics, which she's done. And, you know, hearing them in the band room, it's very noisy. It was very, before we got into the studio, it was actually kind of, I was only kind of 80% really sure of where it was at. Because it's, you know, she's trying to sing over our volume in the rehearsal room. And sometimes it's a little hard to kind of hear exactly what's going on. But getting into the studio, it was really interesting for me, because she comes at it from a very different world, and not from a, and I don't mean this in a, like looking down kind of way, but she doesn't come at it from like a pure musical standpoint. She comes at it more from a like artist. She's a real artist, and she's a real front person. And that's kind of where her vocals and her lyrics come from, and it's awesome. And she's got a very different way of phrasing, something that I would never think of doing, but it totally works, and it sounds totally killer, and it's given this album, you know, a really cool flavor.
Oh no, that's absolutely brilliant. The song names, was that her as well, or did you guys have the song titles before you? As you were going through the process,
There was a little bit of debate around that, but I pushed for her to have full control over that. I think it's really important that the singer is singing from the heart. You know, they write the lyrics, they believe in what they're singing, and a lot of the lyrics for her are very personal, and she's put a lot into it, and it's a lot of her experiences and some traumatic experiences that she's been through. So, it was really important that we kind of gave her free rein to really own that, and she certainly has.
Oh, no, that's real cool. So on a slightly different tangent, you personally, I mean, what have you had as, I mean, like you've had different influences as you've grown older from your years of listening to music. I've seen your record collection about 15 years ago, and it was ginormous then. I can imagine it's only growing hugely. So what would your, and you listen to new music, a lot of new music as well. So what would you say are some of your newer influences that you have?
Yeah, I've maybe for the past 2 or 3 years, I've really been listening again to a lot of black metal, and I've been listening to a lot of power metal. To me, those are the two genres to me where the bands, I believe, not just musically, but what really attracts me to a band is also the visuals. And I believe black metal and power metal, there's just such a great aesthetic to it all. And I believe that a lot of the bands put so much more effort into the way they look, into the way they present, and the whole ethos around their band. Not shitting on death metal or anything like that, but, you know, there's only so many times I can go see, you know, five fat dudes in cargo shorts and matching and various heavy metal band tees, you know what I mean? Whereas I've kind of been drawn towards particularly a lot of US black metal lately, and Northern American. There's so many bands coming out there, a band called Spectral Wound. I've really been digging those guys. There's a band called One of Nine, who are from the States, really Tolkien kind of inspired black metal, and it's super cool. I was just listening to a band from the States now called Yellow Eyes, who I've really been digging. It's black metal, but it's got a little bit of a different vibe to it. A band called Lamp of Murmur, who are super cool. You need to check out their new album. And also, yeah, obviously been listening to lots of power metal. So, yeah, that's pretty much all I listen to at the moment is black metal and power metal.
Oh, wow. So I was going to ask you about, I mean, because band-wise, Bullet Belt started out as a traditional black metal band, but it's changed very much in the last few years, and there isn't much of that still prevalent left with it. But I mean, how does it feel going back to your black metal roots, so to speak, with Windswept?
It feels great, you know. And to be honest, one of the main reasons I kind of kickstarted this band is Bullet Belt. Most of the guys in the band live in different parts of New Zealand, so we aren't full band practice all the time, and I wanted to keep playing, and I wanted to keeping my chops up and having people to play with. So that's why I started what was supposed to be this little side project that maybe we might play a show or two, and you know, maybe a few years down the road we might do a demo. And it's kind of really blossomed from there. And it's super inspired me, and it's super cool playing with younger people who bring a very different energy. And like I said, we all come from very different musical worlds, and we all listen to very different things. I guess I'm the, for want of a better word, the gatekeeper in the band, who's maybe saying, hey, guitarist, you know, you can't pick squeal all over that bit, or you can't, you know, these riffs are a little modern for what we're trying to do. So just kind of just nudging things here and there. I'm really enjoying the experience, and we've got some super cool things lined up coming up throughout the year.
Yeah. Oh no, that's absolutely brilliant. I mean, playing that Over the Hill, is that the record store?
Yeah, we're playing there this Friday. Yeah. It's like the size of your lounge, and there's going to be 60 people absolutely packed in there to the rafters, and it's going to be pretty epic.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty cool. And I mean, it's great to finally have a record store like that in Wellington. I mean, let alone New Zealand. There hasn't been anything like that for a long time.
Yeah, it's great. Probably not so great for my wallet, because every time I walk in there, I tend to walk out with a record. I walked out with the brand new Venom record today, which is super cool. I've kind of kept up with that band. One of the only few that's ridden the ups and downs of the huge Venom catalogue, but the new album's pretty damn sick.
Yeah, I can't say I've listened to it yet. I mean, I knew it was out, but I hadn't actually listened to it yet, so I'll make a point of listening to it.
Definitely worth a listen. You know, like a lot of these older bands, maybe someone needs to be in there helping edit. It's kind of just like there's maybe 7 really killer songs on this album, and then there's maybe 3 or 4 filler. And if you have, like the last Metallica, if you have someone actually saying, hey guys, you know, no one's got fucking time to listen to a record that's an hour long these days, just put out 35 minutes, all killer, no filler.
Well, that's the one, eh?
Yeah.
It must be a hard competition, because, I mean, with the technology advances and the way that Spotify and things like that have changed it, you know, the whole environment, there's so many more bands out there now. It's pretty difficult to keep a gauge on everything. Even you telling me all these bands that you're listening to at the moment, and I'm sitting there going, wow, you know, because, I mean, I listen to completely different sort of stuff, but that's because I get piles and piles of other stuff, and there's so many different ranges now.
Yeah, look, it's you're right, it's impossible. There's a squillion bands. Look, and it's only good. How good that
is. Oh, no, you're right.
Like, metal is absolutely thriving. But, you know, you just find what you're into. You have to dig sometimes. And it's not like the old days when in the late 80s, when I'd go into my local record store and I'd have a choice of maybe 3 albums to choose from. Unsighted, unheard. I'd spend my hard-earned pocket money on that one cassette, take it home, and that's all I had to listen to for the next 2 or 3 weeks until I could afford another one.
Yeah. Well, those are good times, though, weren't they? Good times.
They were. I still like to be honest, I still like to buy unsighted. I like the thrill of going into a record store and buying an album purely based off the cover art, or, you know, who they thank in the thanks list or whatever. I think that's a long lost art that the kids are missing out on.
Well, that's right. I mean, it was very much a ritual, I remember, and I talked to a few people about that, you know, how you would go through, but in the days before the internet, finding music.
Yeah, exactly.
It was a completely different thing, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was, for better or for worse.
It was pretty cool. It was pretty cool. I mean, I remember going to Masterton once with a fellow. We were on the piss, and we stopped in Masterton and met some fella that was staying with his granddad, and he traded me a whole lot of tapes. And it was like, you know, and it was all black metal stuff, and it was like, you know, that was how we learned new music.
Yeah, exactly. No, the good old days, man.
It was absolutely fantastic. So the release formats for you for this current album, because you released it in three different variants, from what I can see, and tape sold out already.
Yeah, so Northern Void Records, who are based in the States, they've released the album, and they've sent us a bunch, and our cassettes were gone in about 2 minutes. And as I said, most of the vinyl is gone. To be honest, it could be all gone now, but I'm purposely holding a bunch back just to make just to have some available at our release show on Friday. So yeah, it's available on vinyl and cassette, and obviously digital.
Excellent. So, are you going to be re-releasing it, doing a whatever you call it, a reissue of it pretty quickly? I mean, obviously, it's
That's
selling
really
pretty.
up to the label. That's all on them. So, and they have been amazing. Kane at Northern Void Records has been absolutely amazing to work with, and yeah, we're really stoked on how everything's gone and how much hard work he's put into it.
Oh, right. That's cool. So, getting out on the road, you've obviously got this one show coming up. Down on Friday at Over the Top, or Over the Hill, sorry. What else have you got lined up? Have you got much planned for the year?
Yeah, we have a we're playing Barbarianism, is it 8 or whatever, in July. We're doing a Friday night there, so that'll be one last home show. Then we have our first international tour, which I can't say where and when, but that's getting announced very shortly. We're heading overseas, and it's not Australia. We're going a little
Oh, that's
further.
even better.
So we've got some shows, a really cool tour all lined up. Just getting all the stuff ready, and we'll announce that. And then we another couple of really sick shows. We'll be playing in November with a touring international artist, and who I can't say yet. And I think that's probably getting announced about this time next week, so you'll know then.
Very cool, very cool. Okay, well, I've got one last question for you before we let you go, and that is words of advice for young musicians.
Words or advice for young musicians? Try and find your own way. Try and be unique. Don't play too many covers. Start if that's how you're starting off with your buddies playing covers, that's fine. But try and take inspiration from your favorite bands, but don't try and copy them or emulate them. Try and find your own little niche, whatever it is. There's 10 zillion bands out there, as we spoke about previously, and the ones who stand out are the ones who are unique and just have something different. So yeah, that would be my advice. And obviously, DIY till death. These days, no one is going to do anything for you. You have to be stubborn, you have to be hardworking, and you have to find like-minded people who are prepared to also go into the trenches and do all the hard work with you, because the days of expecting to get signed by a label and everything done for you are long in the past. It's all about you taking charge of your shit and making it happen.
If you enjoy this NPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms: Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app.
Welcome to Metal 2 Metal, Metalheads Radio. Local, national and international news, interviews and the latest new releases brought to you by NPR, Metal 2 People's Radio. And now we're going to get into our chat with CJ from the band Drowning Pool. Before we do, though, we're going to play the track from the album that we're mostly talking about, and the track Bodies, which I'd say was probably one of their biggest hits. So enjoy.
Yeah.
We're talking with CJ from the band Drowning Pool. They're about to release their Sinner, the 25th anniversary on June the 5th. I mean, dude, you must be excited about that. 25 years.
Dude, it's wild. I think I was blacked out for about 10 or 15 of them. So to me, it's only been maybe 10 years in my brain. But yeah, 25 years, man. It's nuts. You know, I love playing music. I'm very fortunate that I get to still play music. And you know, playing with Mike Luce and Stevie Benton, my bass player and drummer, man, we've been friends since high school. And the fact that we're still here doing this, man, it's been quite a roller coaster ride, as it is for everybody in 25 years of your life. But we're very excited to be here, man. It's awesome.
Oh no, that's absolutely brilliant. How are you going to celebrate the 25th anniversary?
Well, we have I got a bunch of 500 of these awesome purple, like one of a kind vinyls for it. You know, we put a couple extra tracks on the ones you can download online. We did a song with Rob Zombie back in the day called Man Without Fear, which is awesome because I'm not sure if that was still available or not. And we also had a song called Break You on the soundtrack. It was actually the last song we recorded with Dave. Well, one of the last ones, the last one in the center session, if you will. And we had the Chris Renna Triple X version of Bodies. It's got a little extra spice on it, like Tony Satcheri, baby. And that's all going to be like on the deluxe version. But yeah, going on tour, we're going to be playing the record in its entirety, man. I'm excited to do that again. It's been a very long time, like, I don't know, 25 years since we got to do that.
Yeah, man, oh, that's real cool. That's real cool. So I got to ask you about Bodies. I mean, the huge success that it gained from you. I mean, what was it like? You know, you put out a song. I mean, did you know that it was going to be such a big hit when you wrote it created it?
It's always been a fun song, man. And like, you know, one of the first times we did play it, you know, there's a place called Zeppelin's in New Orleans. We all sit at my mom's house. And just early on, you know, we played, you know, South Texas and Louisiana and some of Florida, just getting started as a local band. We did a lot of traveling on our own. And just always had a vibe, man. And my mom came to the club. She's like, oh, I like this Let the Bodies Hit the Floor song. I'm like, oh, mom likes it. It must be cool. But, you know, when it came out, I mean, 2 weeks into it, man, like 2 or 3 weeks after it was released, man, you know, it was everywhere, man. And it is like, here we are 25 years later and we're still rocking it. And there's been a million freaking parodies of the song. And it seems like everybody else is having fun with it as well. So it's awesome to have that and create something that we all enjoy. You know?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, if people don't really know all that much about Drowning Pool, everybody knows Bodies, don't they? I mean, it was all over the bloody wrestling and all that sort of thing. I mean, it was a huge song.
Yeah, man, it still gets used for all kinds of stuff, man. Toilet paper commercials and no, I'm just kidding. No, it's cool, man. And you know, I sit around the house and sometimes I make parodies of you know, we, I mean, I wrote some riffs, so like I'll have fun with it as well, man. I never knew it was just going to be like that. Again, it was just one of those songs. We were in the rehearsal room, you know, cracked open some beers and did a shot of Jaeger at the time. That's what we were drinking and just started jamming out, man. You know, I come from a New Orleans upbringing. I love, you know, jazz and funk and blues, but also love metal. My heart's in metal. So I think that's just kind of what's in the blender for the foundation sound of Drownable, if you will. So.
Yeah, well, I mean, it was an interesting time back then. There was all sorts of different bands coming out, wasn't there?
Yeah, late 90s, man. It seemed like a wild, within rock or metal, there was a wild style, just a wide variety style, if you will. You know, groove metal, funk metal. You know, the term came to new metal with a mix of stuff. But, you know, at the end of the day, man, I still listen to Pantera every single day, man. I'm a metalhead, you know, by heart. But I love all the different aspects to it, man. And there's a lot of cool bands coming out now, man. It's wild. You know, music's been great. We've done a handful of festivals. You know, the last 3 years we've been really busy with Ryan McComb's back in the band. And dude, just to get to see, you know, some of our old school friends, like we just rocked out with Nonpoint Again and Seven Dust, and just seeing a lot of new bands coming out. Just having a great time, man. It seems like a great time in music. Sure.
Oh, that's right. I mean, it definitely is a great time in music. There's still lots of bands that are still going from that era as well. That's the best bit, isn't it?
Yeah, it's pretty wild, dude. It's always fun to catch up. You know, I mean, we toured these bands at some point here or there in our career. Over the span of 25 years, we played shows or toured with just, I wouldn't say everyone, but a majority of them, man, especially from that time period. So it's always great to see them doing their thing and catching up. And the fact that we're all still alive is just amazing. And that, right? Because some people you catch up with, like, oh my God, 25 years ago, it was like, you're still alive. I'm still alive. How did this happen? We're probably pickled from all the vodka.
Excellent. I mean, so do you remember creating the video back then for Bodies, and what was it like, and how much did you guys get involved in doing the storylines and carry on?
Yeah, dude, that was it was an exciting time in life. I mean, I remember every moment that first year and a half, 2 years of our career, man. Like, it was just, you know, to be a local band like everyone else that, you know, has your music in your art, you want to get out to the world. You know, we all want to get it out there and make it. And yeah, dude, that was just, we went to an insane an abandoned insane asylum that was north of Los Angeles, like a good 2 hour ride, man. And you know, it was the first time doing a video. It was fun. You know, it was a lot of different, you know, directors and treatment and stuff like that came to the table. But, you know, we're working with Glenn Bennett, dude, who's awesome and still doing stuff. And we catch up every now and then. You know, it was just the first couple of videos we ever made. And then our life was with Glenn. And the only thing that we added to is all the strobe lights that they brought in. You know, I wanted to, you know, we do a lot of jumping. And you know, even back to the local band, I would just bring a lot of strobe lights and just have them everywhere, man. That was our thing. So that was cool. They brought all this truss in, put all these lights up there, and you know, just cables mangled everywhere on the floor, because that's just kind of like, you know, I'm awake picking up cables, I'm having dreams, I'm picking up cables, just cables everywhere. My whole life is just surrounded by cables. So it's just all that they made happen within the video on top of the treatment that was there. So dude, it was awesome, man. We were running around in the insane asylum, scaring the hell out of each other, dude. It was great time.
Oh no, it sounds like a heap of fun. You obviously you've got the extra tracks for the digital release and the vinyl. What sort of format? I mean, you've told us a little bit. You got sort of turquoise, did you say?
We have like a smoky purple one that we made, and then the label themselves have their, they did like a 500 of theirs, and theirs is like they have a blue one, and then there's like a Revolver magazine. I got it, made a couple as well that are like a white one, but yeah, man, I probably should have got more, but I just did the 500 thing. That's what keeps it special, you know. They just came in, actually, so I have one over there.
Oh, very cool. Yeah, well, everyone else gets their hot hands on it on June the 5th. So what are some of your favorite memories of working with Dave?
Oh, man, it was always fun and wild with Dave, too. You know, when Mike and Stevie got started, actually, Mike Luce, the drummer, and myself were in New Orleans, you know, trying to look for that right bass player, singer, and Mike was friends with Stevie from before, because Mike lived in Dallas for a little while, and just the music scene here was kicking it, man, in the early 90s, so, you know, Mike and I moved here and got with Stevie, and we went through, you know, it was a couple different, you know, members and people that we worked with, but it wasn't until Dave walked in the room. You know, we had a lot of time of us three just writing songs before the Center record, and he was just, you know, Dave was in like five freaking bands. He's just the guy on the scene. He was always out, just very, you know, he had that charisma, man. He just had the it thing. And dude, every moment with him was fun, man. He, you know, he made every night great. He was, you know, he wanted to be a singer in a rock band, and he wanted to put on a party 24/7. And that's exactly what we did.
Yeah. Oh, no, that's awesome. And you got to tour the world with them for a bit there.
Yeah, man. Awesome. Always great memories, dude. All of us experienced that together for the first time as well. It's amazing, man.
Yeah, oh, I can imagine. So back then, the writing and recording process, how did you guys work?
So, it's very different per record, man. Every single time we've, written stuff, just what goes on in your life on top of just, for us, we've had obviously a couple of member changes on the singer front, Ryan's back in the band. But, in the beginning there with Center, it was just us three in a room, Mike, Steve, and myself writing together. We had a lot of that stuff built up before we brought Dave in. And then, working with Jay Bumgarner, who was the first producer. I mean, Jay was, at the time, man, Jay's amazing. And he's working with a lot of big bands, man, in our G studio, and just having a team of people to like just hone in on it. But we didn't, we had our stuff pretty much honed in. We didn't get a lot of, I heard of like horror stories of labels and people coming in and telling bands changing their image and the sound and all that stuff. They walked in like, oh man, sounds good. And they walked out. You're like, all right, well, I thought they were going to be more into it, but they, I guess they were cool with what we had. I mean, we just write from the heart, man, write what we feel. So that writing process was like that, man. It was a great, again, learning curve. The first time doing it for real. We would go to the Rainbow every night, because we were recording out in LA and stuff, and met so many people during that time period that we were there. Slipknot was there recording their record. Paul Gray was actually the first person I met in Slipknot, and a handful of other bands. Alien Ant Farm was out there. We hung with those dudes. We've known them since day one. And again, like you said, the band's still playing today, man. It's just awesome that we're still rocking and rolling 25 years later.
Oh, that's exactly right. So, how much has that the writing and music and recording process changed now? I mean, 25 years later, there's a lot of technology different and all that sort of thing. How much has it changed now for you?
Yeah, man, it's been a wild ride. I'll go through the other ones real fast. We were Johnny K, and we recorded with him in Chicago, together by a new singer. And it's kind of been like that. We write, and then we get another singer, and we kind of curtail it to fit within the studios. We worked with Kato Kunwala, that was freaking amazing for a couple of records. And now we're working with a guy named Sean. And the Mountain Technology is pretty wild because look, I got the studio set up here. I'll come up with ideas and riffs here. You'll see if you might, we all have this stuff at the house. But for us, it never really, magic doesn't happen unless we're all in a room together. I mean, this is more of a coming up with ideas part, but that's the kind of the approach we're taking now. We've been, it's been 3 years, Ryan's been in the band, and we've been sending stuff back and forth, and we have two songs out with Ryan as of now. But in this process, maybe we wanted to get back to how we started, man, because I've been listening to the Center record a lot. We're going to be performing it in its entirety. So, about a good month ago, Mike, Stevie, and myself, we like, let's just sit in a room and just get the foundation going again. It was awesome to do that, man, because we haven't had a chance to do that in so long. And man, the magic was just happening, dude. It just started flowing. So we're gonna get back in this next week. It's been another week just together. We just went got an Airbnb house instead of studio in there. So we're all just stuck in a house together like we used to be. And a lot of great things are happening right now. So trying to get a new record out by the end of the year. Fingers crossed,
Oh, that's what we want to hear. I mean, because you've released the one single so far, haven't you? The new single, The Wrong One.
Oh yeah, we did Wrong One. So that was a collab we did with a band called Sorry X. The amazing singer Alexa is awesome, and another person that did Cover of Bodies, and she just has an amazing voice. She has three major styles that I like. She has the singing voice, she's got a great heavy voice, and then there's a new modern day of like the rap delivery, if you will. It's got a different sway to it. So it's like the old school, new school. It's the foundation has like that new metal style that we built off of, and I just. The lyrics are great, delivery's great. So we went back and forth. I did the solo right here. It was just a fun collaboration to do, man. It was something new and fresh. And that song's jamming. I enjoy it. I hope you
Oh,
like it too.
that's excellent, mate. That's very cool. So, how many sort of guitars do you work with when you're doing your writing and everything and your recording? Do you have a few or do you just stick to one?
I would show you the wall right now. I'm in the house because my house is like Guitar Center, man. I'm 53 and I actually have 53 guitars. Not that I'm trying to keep it up per year, but I didn't realize I was such a collector because it's, I've been, always on the move, traveling and stuff. It's the first time I got a place where I've been settled down for a good 4 years and got to hang stuff up. But for me, man, I have a signature DC Rich that I made a while back that I write on a lot and record with. There's a that's my main go-to's, man. I have so many different BC Rich. I love that company. And there's a Michael Kelly I have that's a baritone that sounds really great as well. I sometimes we do chunky rhythms on that one. But yeah, man, my my CGP is my Eagle model. It's you know, I had to make it the way I like it. I want something that felt like a Strat and a Les Paul at the same time, and it can kind of get both tones out of it. And just to have a wide variety of tones. And that's you know, that's what I have, man. That's my baby. Where's it at right now? Where are you at? Oh, it's on the other wall. Okay.
So I mean, you got 50 out of your 53 guitars. Do you have a favorite that's just about looks and about, you know, that sort of thing, rather than playability?
You know, it's pretty wild, man. It's they all got, you know, they all have a different feel to it, and I guess it, you know, I gravitate toward it, whatever kind of mood I'm in. I mean, I got one. It's like the Volta neck Eagle model that they had years ago. That was kind of like the bottom bass, cheaper one, if you will. I just wanted something to have on the bus that I could play on and write on, that I could throw around and get beat up, and I wouldn't be too upset about it, instead of bringing out, you know, the super expensive one. And then all of a sudden, that's like my go-to writing guitar, and it's like I love it now. So now it's like almost my most precious guitar. It's like, you know, it's not necessarily, you know, the most expensive one is as much as like just the relationship you have with it, I guess, in a sense.
Yeah, no, it does. It totally makes sense.
Wow.
Well, I mean, because that's it. I mean, the guitar is an extension of your body, isn't it? And your soul, because that's where you write from.
It definitely is, man. It definitely is. That's something else I'll notice about myself. Well, because, you know, again, just like being busy and touring and stuff, I'm, you know, it's nice to be back in writing mode. Sometimes life gets in the way, and I start getting like, you know, where's my woobie? Where's my guitar? I got to write something. Let me sit down for 15 minutes and just, it's, I don't know, it's a relaxing thing for me as well.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe you just get all that aggression out, like it's hard, and you're like, hey, I'm happy again.
Well, that's the beauty of heavy metal, isn't it? You know, it's about getting that aggression out without being, you know, without hurting anybody other than their eardrums.
Right. That's the thing I think a lot of people don't understand about rock shows and metal, because sometimes people, you know, certain family a little bit more, you know, on the lighter side of things. But, you know, I call it the heavy metal workout. I mean, we all go out there, we get in the pit, we get it out. And then after the show, I mean, everybody just walks out like, yeah, I did it. You know, the next day, of course, you're like, oh, my back. But, oh, my throat, I can't talk. But, yeah, man, it's the heavy metal workout.
Exactly, mate. Oh, it's half the fun of it, isn't it? Oh, absolutely brilliant. Do you have a favorite place where you like to write, or do you write on the road?
I write on the road a lot of times after the show, especially, you know, they're all in great intents, but sometimes with that energy I still have, I'll come up with riff and ideas and put it together here at the house. But I just redid I have a gazebo I built outside for the third time now. Every year it seems like there's this hailstorm or something. It got destroyed. It's been destroyed for a hot minute. And I didn't realize too until, you know, last few weeks when we started getting in the studio and writing again. It's like, I got to have the gazebo set up. So I got it all set up, and it's wild. You know, it's like a nice, peaceful zen place. I guess it's just I'm able to focus and concentrate because I write heavy stuff out there. And it was a place I used to live at where you can kind of see a lake out the window. And I think I wrote, it was just so peaceful, like a duck on the lake. And then I just write these heavy riffs. So I don't know what the balance is with that, but it seems like the peaceful place, I get more stuff done.
Oh, nice. That's pretty cool. Awesome. So your first recollections of music, what was it that you first heard or saw that made you want to become a musician?
That made me want to become a musician. My dad used to play bass and sing in a band. So just growing up in New Orleans on the weekends, they would just jam in the living room. So I was always around it. You know, that was big Led Zeppelin, Black Sabbath. They would do some Beatles and stuff like that, covers, and, you know, back in the day. So I was just, since I can remember, I was around it. And then, but the first time, you know, there was one time, being a kid, you know, you turn the stereo up all the way, and it's like 8-track situation. And I guess that's when ABBA came out. So I got my face blown off for the first time as a kid to Dancing Queen on 11. I do remember that. I was like, ah!
That's pretty cool.
I wish I could make that up. That's a real story, man. ABBA, Black Sabbath, and you know, Led Zeppelin.
Yeah. Oh, no, that's pretty cool, man. So who would you say are your heroes and inspirations, and has it changed over the years?
You know, there's been more over the years for sure. But, you know, my first, you know, big ones, I mean, you know, starting at a younger age, like, you know, again, just because of my father, Jimmy Page, Jimi Hendrix, you know, a lot of 70s rock like that. But, you know, the metal came out right away. And Testament was one of the first ones that I heard. Testament, of course, Metallica at the same time. But Alex Skolnick is one of my favorites. Like, he's always been, you know, always said this, he's been one of my biggest influences. And I love jazz and blues like that. And he's got the Alex Skolnick Jazz Trio, which is sick, you know, doing jazz versions of metal stuff. You know, that's always been a big one. You know, I mean, of course, like when the Virtuosos came, like Steve Vai and Joe Satriani, all that stuff was a amazing too. So I play upon the chops. Not that we have a lot of like crazy shredding solos and all the drumming songs I play for the song, of course. But I still keep up on it because sometimes it's just nice to just get down on it, you know. And you know, it's changed a lot too because I'm kind of you know going back, been hit listening to a lot of blues again. I got the BBC BB King station on in the car now, and you know, I had met Joe Bonamassa by happenstance through Seymour Duncan Pickups at NAMM 1 year, and I didn't even know. You know him as much. I was just, hey, what's up? Talking to this guy, and he's over here playing guitar. Oh, that's pretty cool, man. Like, I can play a little bit. We're jamming out, and everybody's like, we just talked to Joe Bonamassa. Like, I'm everybody, the dude's freaking sick, man. So, like, you know, been checking out some of his stuff as well.
Yeah, I mean, we're fairly close in age and that. And growing up, you know, you talked about Stevie Vai and Joe Satriani, and we had the guitar heroes of that day. Do you think there's anybody really coming close these days to recreate that? Because I mean, we don't seem to have those guitar heroes anymore, do
You
we?
know, that's a, you know, I never really thought about that. That's a great observation. We haven't had somebody, just a guitar virtuoso, come out and to just like come out recently and do it. I mean, there's a couple of bands that are like jam bands that I'll do a lot of instrumental type stuff. That's really cool. What's their faces off? Oh, feel bad. I just got the name of the band. And I'm gonna say it. It's like there's just a thousand names just jumped in my head. But you know, they got a lot of shredders out there. I mean, you know, Sinister Gates was killing it. I'm surprised he didn't put out like a solo record. Of just shredding stuff like that, you know. But it's within the music now, I guess, more. But you know, there was a time period, you know, late 80s, early 90s, when you know, I had that mentality of like, man, it'd be cool to do like just a full solo record. But you know, it's all things drownable, man. I just like getting on stage and jamming out with my brothers, you know, and hanging out with rock fans. So I don't think I'd have time to do that if I wanted to.
Oh no, well, we're glad that you're still able to do it. It's absolutely fantastic. We need the bands out there playing and shredding and entertaining the
Yeah, man.
crowds. So getting out on the road, you guys got a tour coming up and all that to support. I mean, obviously you said you're going out and playing this in full.
Yeah, we're going out January 11th fly out. We're doing the Download Festival on the 12th. There's a handful of festivals overseas we're doing, and then we're doing club shows in between. But we got a show with Snot, which is awesome. I thought we're gonna do a couple more, but at least have that one, man. I can't wait for that show. And we have several of the bands on off, you know, throughout the club shows that are rocking with us as well. So it's going to be a mix of festivals, club shows, and then, you know, coming up in August, September, we have a lot of weekend stuff that we're trying to put together now throughout the States. We haven't really toured the States a lot the last year or two because we've been overseas a lot, kind of rebuilding, you know, that, give the States a break before we're coming out playing the Center Records in entirety. So filling that up, going to fill up the rest of the year and hopefully get a new record out by the end of the year. Hopefully January or February we'll come around and hopefully visit you guys. You know, we're looking at doing Australia and hopefully New Zealand the beginning of next year and doing some more overseas stuff. So yeah, it's gonna be busy. This is the calm before the storm, literally. This
That's what we like
it
to
is
hear,
the
you know.
calm before the storm.
I know there's a lot of fans down here in New Zealand who would absolutely love to see you. So yeah, I hope that comes into fruition. I know it's a hard road to get down to the bottom here. It's a lot of bands will go as far as Australia and that, but taking that step over to New Zealand, I don't know why it costs so much more, but it does.
It was insane. And we had two shows booked there last year. Or was it? Yeah, beginning of last year, because we played and we flew there and we went to the airport for a day. But something, I don't know, logistics didn't happen. So then we stayed at the airport and then we flew to Australia. So I was there for about 8 hours, but we didn't get to play, man. No. But hopefully next time, you know, sometimes these things fall through. It's a lot to put a show together anyway. Just, you know, especially going overseas, if one thing's missing on one piece of paperwork, it doesn't happen, man. So it's a lot involved to make it happen. So hopefully this time we're already working on it. So I'm hoping February next year, 2027.
Oh, that's exciting, mate. I know there'll be a lot of people excited to hear that. You've already touched on the release format, so I mean, you must be excited because digital seems to be quite a big deal, doesn't it, nowadays?
Yeah, it's all about the digital, man. It's all about you know, there's no like hard copies and files, but even if they had that, they would probably shred them anyway. But it's all, yeah, it's digital download. So if I still like having, you know, and I still get records and I have a lot of cassette, I have all kinds of stuff, dude. Your CDs and cassette tapes and all that stuff. But you know, I mean, it's easy to get on the phone and download stuff as well. But you know, I have a record player in my living room and a full, you know, 2000-watt PA, and you know, I still listen to records pretty loud, analog style.
Oh, nice. So do you have a decent record collection?
You know, I had a big one, and it shrunk down. I had it, you know, in New Orleans for a while, and when the hurricanes came and it flooded, and all of them just got wet and stuck together.
Oh,
and just
mate, that's devastating.
Crack of sandwich. So I'm rebuilding that slowly but surely. You know, my wife and I have a handful going on in the living room, just choice ones as we go, ones that we still listen to.
Oh, no, that's absolutely fantastic. Well, I've got one last question before we let you go, and that is words of advice for young musicians.
Words of advice for young musicians. I would say keep everything, get in the band, or at least have everybody kind of delegate some work. Like whether it's 2, 3, 4, 5 people in the band, everybody kind of take on a thing and try to learn that and be a unit as you can. We've just been through a roller coaster ride of managers and labels and stuff throughout our career. And, you know, I could sit here and for hours and give you the horror stories up and down, but always keep an eye on yourself. This is your art, your creativity. And, you know, we have a great team of people with us now, the best team ever, but we handpicked the team we have, you know, Shan with SPG Records, and, you know, we have, you know, Shauna with, you know, publicist, and you just, everything just, you know, you should meet them. And management wise, you know, we're self-managed now, and things are happening better now than ever before. Communication and just everything. It's a little bit more work, but, you know, that's what we're here to do, man. Want to get your music out there and work for it.
Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.npr.nz/donate.
G'day and welcome to Metal to Metal, Metalheads Radio. Local, national and international news, interviews and the latest new releases brought to you by NPR, Metal of Two Peoples Radio. And for this section we talk with Tim King from the band Embryonic Autopsy. Before we do though, we're going to feature one of the new tracks from their latest album, and that's the track Feasting Upon the Rotted Uterus. We'll have the first part of the interview and follow that up with the track Cleopatra's Spawn. G'day, we're talking with Tim King from the band Embryonic Autopsy. They're about to release their newest album, Rise of the Mutated, on 5th of June, about a week away. You must be getting excited.
Yeah, in fact, it's doubly exciting because we're starting a European tour on June 3rd. So we'll be over doing a bunch of festivals and then doing club dates with 6 Feet Under. So the album comes out where we're right at the start of the tour, so it's going to be pretty awesome.
That's absolutely brilliant, mate. I was going to ask you how you were going to celebrate, and you've kind of answered the question. You're obviously going to be doing some shows.
Yeah, we actually have a concert on the day of the release, so we'll throw in a few back that night.
Yeah, man, I can imagine. Absolutely brilliant. So you released the two singles so far. Could you tell us a little bit about them?
Yeah, we did the two singles and two videos. A good friend of ours named Jason Mute from Laser On Films, he put them together. He's done all eight of our videos, so he definitely knows the look and the sound of the band. So what we did is, you know, we're signed to Massacre Records, and this is our third album with them. So they always like to lead with two songs, and then they put out the record. So we chose these two songs. The first one's called Feasting Upon the Rotted Uterus, which is a nice, fast, you know, song. It's got a lot of grind beats, a lot of trills and things like that. And then the second one, Aborted Within the Aztec Temple, is the slowest song on the record. In fact, I think it's the slowest song we might have ever done.
Oh, wow.
I'm a huge My Dying Bride fan.
Yeah.
From the early days, like nice. the EP and, you know, As the Flower Withers and stuff like that. So it's got this real crazy, like, doom feel to it. So I really had a lot of fun personally with that one because I kind of made it a lot of My Dying Bride-esque, if you will, for that song. So we kind of took two extremes, really a really fast song and a nice slowed down, sludgy, really heavy song, and released those two first.
Oh, it's always a good idea to give the fans a bit of a taste of what to expect, isn't it?
Yeah, for sure. And it's a good balance between the songs on the record. You know, with every record, what we've tried to do is go a little bit heavier, a little bit faster, a little bit more grotesque in the lyric style. And we definitely, you know, exceeded that one on this. There's some songs that I don't even know how our drummer played them in the studio. I mean, it gives Flo from Cryptopsy a run for his money, if you know that, how fast Flo plays, you know. So
yeah. Oh, wow. Oh, that's really cool. That's really cool. So you talked about making the videos there briefly. How involved do you guys get involved in that? I mean, you obviously got the guy that's doing it for you, but do you guys, like, have some input into the storylines and all that sort of carry on?
Yeah, I mean, Jason, since, like, he's done eight videos for us already, he knows what we're looking for and, you know, good angles for the band and what to do in that respect. So what he'll do is he'll bring us a video treatment and some ideas, and then we kind of just tweak it from there. And he came up with some really good ideas for this one. In fact, there's in the first video, there's a lot of fire going on, which, judging by your background here on the Zoom call, you like fire pretty much. But yeah. It got the flames got so high, we were in a barn. The owner of the barn started freaking out because he thought we were going to catch the whole barn on fire, which kind of would have been cool if the whole thing went up while we were shooting the video, but I'm glad it didn't, you know.
He would have been a bit annoyed at you.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Oh, well, so that's all good, mate. So the album cover design, who did that?
We've been using this. In fact, they've done the last two album covers. They're called Cutting Edge Metal. They're a great company, and they represent a bunch of artists. So what you do is with these guys, you kind of give them the theme of what you're looking for, the lyrics and all, and then they go to their various artists and see who has the best concept and really captures, you know, what you're looking for. So, you know, with this one, the albums that we did we decided to do a trilogy, and this is the third part of the trilogy. So they really captured what we were looking for, you know, on that. And the artwork in the actual album and stuff, we have numerous pieces of artwork in there, and they just really captured everything we were looking for. I really like that company a lot.
Oh, that's good. That's always good to have somebody that you really like. I was going to ask you about it being the third album in the trilogy. How did that help with the writing process?
Well, what me and our guitar player Scott were really intrigued by like alien stuff, and we watched the History Channel and all that on like how the government are like the governments around the world are like covering up alien visitation and crashing at Roswell, and we're really intrigued by how like the Egyptians, the Aztecs, and the Mayans created such amazing architecture and elaborate languages and different things when they didn't have the tools or really the methodology at the time. So, it's pretty intriguing to think that, there's some sort of like alien technology involved or alien intervention with it. So with the song titles and the lyric content and the whole overall theme of everything, we really went for, incorporating that into kind of a horror film on it set to music with the gross song titles, the gross lyrics. Nowadays, in order to get anything across to people, you pretty much have to beat them over the head with it. It has to be shocking, it has to be over the top, and it has to be something that people are going to take notice to because there's just so much content and everything out there. Unless you do something over the top or to where people are like, "What in the hell is this?" It just tends to get overlooked. So we combined some, extreme and obscene things and song titles and lyrics with the whole concept that we were looking for with the alien thing. And, with the first record, Prophecies of the Conjoined, it's where, they, to continue with the trilogy and the story, is when they first started to like, breed aliens and human DNA and how things kind of came about with that. Second record, Origins of the Formed, is when they started to kind of hone in on the life forms that stayed alive from it, but they all started coming out deformed and weird and stuff like that. And with Rise of the Mutated, it's kind of the finishing of this trilogy where they actually get the mutations right to where they're living, breathing creatures that are, seeking to retake and reclaim what was once theirs with the, ancient civilizations and cultures and stuff. So there's a bit of a story behind it, as well as making it just grotesque and crazy.
How close do you think we are to getting those things being fully disclosed? I mean, like Trump came out with some of the UFO stuff, and it's interesting to look at, but how close do you think we are to getting some alien stuff released?
I mean, it's I believe in all that sort of stuff, I mean,
Yes, I do.
there's a lot of people out there that think it's, a lot of mumbo jumbo, and everybody can believe what they want, but it's really weird how, back in the 70s and early 80s, like a microwave was like the greatest thing on earth, and a radio, and now all of a sudden, I'm talking to you, thousands and thousands of miles away in New Zealand, and I'm sitting here in Chicago on a handheld device, and the technology just happens so fast.
That's
It's
right.
it, I definitely think that, they found alien technology and just didn't know how to use it or crack it open or develop it. And, with the way technology is nowadays, it's just so advanced. There's got to be some sort of explanation for it because, you look back, 20, 30 years ago, and, things like this were unheard of, and now it's just getting crazier and crazier. It's almost like they unlock some sort of, foreign alien technology and are starting to understand how to use it,
Oh, no, I agree with you wholeheartedly. I think that's totally it. I mean, just as you say, the advance in technology in the last 20 years. I mean, like, I didn't get a cell phone until 20 years ago, and my kids now, they got their cell phones at 12. So, it's crazy
Oh, it's insane. Yeah, it's insane.
the advancements. And like you say, being able to talk across the globe, as a kid, I dreamed of talking to my heroes, and never thought it would happen though, because I didn't think we had the technology, and here we are.
Oh, exactly. I mean, I remember, being on tour when I was in my teen years. We were in Europe with my original band, Oppressor. It was with my first death metal band, and we didn't have cell phones. We had to find a pay phone with a calling card and hope they spoke enough English to call back home. And, you know, we were there with disposable cameras and cameras, and you had to snap the shot and you hoped it looked okay. And you had to go home and develop the film. Now, you know, you can take a million pictures on your phone and retake them if they don't look right. It's insane compared to when I was growing up, you know, in my younger years as compared to now. It's, you know, light years ahead of anything. You know, it's crazy.
Well, especially, I mean, also when you bring in the AI aspect of it as well, you know, all those sort of things, we're almost creating the aliens ourselves, you
Oh yeah, exactly. I mean, this whole AI thing, I could go on and on about it. It
know.
freaks me out, to be honest with you. I mean,
Yeah.
there's a lot of stuff that's pretty interesting about it, but when there's some things where I can't tell the difference between like a AI video person and a real person. It's so good. And
Yeah.
it's scary to see what's gonna, and it freaks the crap out of me to think about what's gonna happen 5, 10 years from now with all this sort of stuff.
Oh no, I agree wholeheartedly, and you know, bringing it into music, I think is absolutely destruction. It's no good at all. It just takes the originality out of music, and it really sucks. So I can only hope that that they don't. But it takes me back to, I don't know if you remember that movie. Oh, what was it? The one with Bruce Willis, where oh shit, I can't
12
remember.
Monkeys?
No, there was
Oh.
another one. Oh shit! Oh, I can't. It had Mila Jovovich or whatever her name in it as well, and they had this thing where they went to a concert, and it was like this opera singer,
Oh,
and
The Fifth Element.
yeah, that's the one, Fifth Element,
Yeah, great
and it was
movie.
that was crazy, man. Yeah, you
Yeah.
know, it's almost like we're heading there with the sphere, you know, that
We
sort
might
of.
be coming close to that. Who knows, you
Well,
know?
that's right, you know. Well, I mean, you just got to look at the drone wars and that sort of thing. It just, to me, that screams
Oh yeah,
Skynet,
absolutely, absolutely.
you know.
It's
Anyway, we're getting a bit sidetracked here from what we're meant to be talking about. So the album, the writing and the recording process, how do you guys work?
With that, it starts with a riff all the time. You know, our guitar player Scott, he writes all the music, and then he brings it to the rest of the band. And Kenzie, our bass player, will come up with some bass parts. Marco, our drummer, will come up with, you know, drum parts. And then once the song, we have the skeleton of it, that's when I'll go in and kind of rip it apart and say, you know, let's put this part here, let's put that part there. I've got lyrical ideas for this. I've got, you know, vocal patterns for that. And then we kind of put everything together from that. And Scott actually is a engineer and a producer. So he records and produces all of our records. And then we always have you know, somebody to either assist with mixing or mastering. And we've been using Ulrich Wild for the last few releases, and he's done everything from, you know, Pantera reinventing the steel to the Static X records. He did all the Death Clock records. He's done you know, lots, I mean, his vast rapport with that guy. He even worked on the Alice in Chains Dirt record, so
Oh
he
wow.
really knows how to fine-tune the everything sonically. I mean, we try to keep things, you know, we grew up on 90s inspired death metal, and that's the whole reason that we formed this band, was to kind of bring back that feel of 90s death metal with, like, you know, Your Death, Obituary, Incantation, Suffocation, Entombed, Grave, Unleashed, you know, the list goes on and on. And
Yeah.
just kind of bring back that style, but in a more modern way with better production and, you know, heavier and more refined. But those classic albums and stuff like that are just so good. And, you know, I don't really think anybody's really topped them in all these years. I mean, there's some great stuff out there, don't get me wrong. I mean, I love bands like Extermination, Dismemberment, and Sanguzabog and stuff like that. Lorna Shore, I think, is a great band. But you know, give me a Morbid, you know, an old school Morbid Angel record, or, you know, Wolver, you know, Clandestine, or Left Hand Path by Entombed, or, you know, Tomb of the Mutilated by Cannibal Corpse, or something like that. That's where my heart lies, I guess you could say.
Yeah, I can understand that. I was a 90s kid when it came to the death metal and everything, so I completely understand, those first times you hear that Morbid Angel, those first few albums, they were just fucking, they just ripped your soul apart.
Absolutely.
It was beautiful. Oh, man, that's absolutely brilliant. Now, being that this is, like, say, the third album in the trilogy, and it's a bit of a theme and all that sort of stuff, your lyrical inspiration, I mean, we've touched on it briefly there, but, how easy is it to write when you've already got a story? I mean, it must make it a lot easier to write your lyrics.
Yeah, it was really fun, and the concept came about when we actually formed the band, and I was thinking about what kind of vocal style to use and what kind of lyrical style. And with back in the Oppressor days, I was always singing about the downfall of humanity and just things that were going on in the world, and my disgust for how so many things were wrong in the world and things like that. And back then, I was a teenager and in my early 20s while we had the band, and I thought I could change the world and make a difference and all. And as you get older and stuff, you kind of realize that no matter how hard you try and what you do, you might make a little dent in it, but very few people get to, change the world and make it a better place to live. You can try all you want. So with this band, I kind of want to make it more, less like about, so much of like world politics and things that were going on, and more of like a horror movie set to music, and using that alien theme and the stuff that's been intriguing me for decades and stuff like that. I want to incorporate that with like a total gore lyrics and kind of disgusting song titles and stuff, and it's worked really well so far because people see the song titles and there's platforms we get banned on, and
Nice.
people going crazy with it. I mean, back to like, I wanted it to be back to almost like the Butchered at Birth, Tomb of the Mutilated era of Cannibal Corpse, where the song titles and all that were so disgusting that they were banned in Germany for 10 years before they could actually have their records out and stuff. And like I said, nowadays there's so many bands and so much content, you literally have to hit somebody over the head with a sledgehammer to get them to pay attention. So we combined, our kind of old school, going back to the, brutal death metal, the 90s sound, with, off the wall song titles and extreme content and stuff like that. And a lot of people have taken notice. We formed the band in 2021, so it's a fairly new band. It's only been around 5 years, and we've accomplished a lot. We toured the entire United States with Nile and 6 Feet Under last year. We're going over with 6 Feet Under to do, like eight festivals and a bunch of dates with them in Europe now. And we've done a few other US tours. So we've conquered a lot of ground in the 5 years we've been together. And it's great to see how the fan base is reacting. And it's really cool to see that a lot of people remember, me from the Oppressor days and are excited that I'm back doing death metal again. So it's been a real exciting thing for me, and a kind of a lot of fun. It's fun to be back on the mic and growling and gurgling and doing all that sort of stuff again,
Well, that's it. I mean, it's a bit of a step away from your other band, Soil, which is a completely different style, really. So, yeah, I mean, it must be quite magic to be able to get rid of all that aggression and change it up a bit and get a bit more, a bit more violence.
Oh, absolutely. And with Soil, I play bass and do backing vocals, but I'm not the front man in that band. So it's cool to be back on the mic and at the forefront, because I have a big enough mouth, so I get to use it again.
Oh, it's good, mate. I mean, yeah, I mean, it'd be cool playing bass and Soil and all that sort of stuff, but I can imagine, yeah, just the kick you'd get off being front man again. I mean, especially since, I mean, you are the head of Oppressor. So, yeah, oh, that's absolutely cool.
So.
If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawa 2, you could make your very own, just like this one. NPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out npr.nz for more information.
G'day and welcome to Metal to Metal, Metalheads Radio. Local, national and international news, interviews and the latest new releases brought to you by NPR, Manawatu Two People's Radio. We're now going to have the second part of the interview with Tim King from Embryonic Autopsy. Before we do though, we're going to have the track Aborted within the Aztec Temple. We'll have the second part of the interview and finish it off with Dipping in the Vaginal Nectar. favorite mic that you use?
Yeah, I actually discovered these mics called Telefunkens, and mm-hmm. I've been using the M81. They're an amazing mic for death metal because they actually register lower than most conventional mics. So when you give those real deep growls or gurgles or whatever, it really makes them clear and clarity and makes them very gives it makes it very clear and gives it a really good clarity, especially for death metal. And then even when you hit like the highs, like I do some screams and stuff with this mic, it peaks out the highs and peaks out the lows. So it really gives a lot of range to it.
Oh, that's mint. So do you use that for both recording and live?
I did on this last record. I just discovered them about a year ago. So I previously wasn't using them. And then somebody turned me on to them and I just fell in love with them. They're amazing live. And I actually used it in the studio on this record too. So,
oh, that's excellent. That's always good to know. It's always people wanting to know what gears you use.
Yeah, exactly.
So, do you have a favorite place that you like to write? Do you write on the road?
I never get any writing done on the road. It's always, you know, there's always so much going on and planning your day and, you know, getting everything ready for the show and stuff. I never really get inspired by that. What I like to do is, you know, sit in my guest bedroom in the house and, sit at the desk and with a pair of headphones on and kind of get inspired by that. You know, that's usually where I get the majority of my, you know, vocal ideas and writing and stuff. Or, you know, if I'm sitting around and watching a movie or something and something pops up that looks interesting, I'll grab out a notepad and write down some ideas or something. If I see something, you know, cool on TV or something that kind of sparks an interest, you know, for maybe a song title or content or something like that.
Yeah, oh, that's always good to know. And album guests, because you've got bloody the dude from Suffocation again, and who else have you got on there?
Yeah, I mean, what another thing, you know, from being back in the early days of death metal is I made a lot of friends. So when we formed this band, you know, I actually reached out to like Terrence from Suffocation and James Murphy and Jack Owen. And just kind of asked them what they thought, you know, the stuff, you know, because I was like, I haven't played death metal in so long. You know, I kind of wanted to see what my old buddies thought. And they were like, this stuff's really good, you know. And they all basically offered to throw down a solo on it. So it's kind of became a tradition for each record is to have, you know, some guest appearances. On the first record, we had James do one solo and Terrence do one solo. Then on the last record, James did three solos, Terrence did one, and Jack Owen did two. And on this new record, James Murphy did four solos and Terrence did one. Jack was busy, you know, finishing up the new 6 Feet Under record, so he wasn't available. But it's been kind of a running theme to have, you know, the same guest appearances on each record. They're almost like, you know, quiet, unsung members of the band, you know, that are in there. And James Murphy and, you know, Terrence and even Jack are just such identifiable guitar players, you know, especially James Murphy. I mean, he's up there with me to, like, you know, Randy Rhoads and Zakk Wylde and Dimebag Darrell and, you know, all the greats. I mean, James just has a style all his own that's just nobody sounds like him. When you hear a James Murphy solo, you know that's James Murphy. So it's been fun to have not only to have legends in the scene play on it, but also, you know, I'm proud to call them friends too. So it's really neat when you can have your friends that are also death metal legends play on your recordings.
I mean, it's also magic just to know that these guys are still doing it, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, they've been doing it for years now. And, you know, they haven't gone away. It's just, you know, a lot of people were sort of dispelled death metal back in the early days. But, you know, it's just getting stronger and stronger, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, brutal death metal is back with a vengeance. I mean, all these big USA festivals, they've got, you know, Dying Fetus and Suffocation and Incantation on it, you know. I mean, to be honest with you, the whole reason we formed my other band Soil in the first place was black metal, you know, Norwegian black metal and black metal was taking over where death metal was, once the reigning, king of the scene. And, I looked at my guys in Oppressor and I'm like, I'm not putting on corpse paint and playing crappy riffs, just to fit in with trends and stuff. And we were all like, well, what are we going to do? And we all decided, well, why don't we go back to our roots and start playing, some like Sabbath riffs and some Ozzy riffs and some like Metallica Master of Puppets, type riffs and stuff like that. And we were really into like Corrosion of Conformity and stuff. So we just started jamming that, like almost stoner rock type stuff. And that's how Soil was formed, as a side project that we just wanted to kind of get back to our roots on, because black metal was overshadowing death metal at the time. And we just weren't into black metal, the early stages of it, at least. It's since become really good with bands like, Demi Burger and Cradle of Filth, when they, started getting stuff together and stuff like that. And there's a lot of great black metal bands out now, but back then it was just like really just sloppy and crazy and out of tune and, high pitched vocals and stuff. And that just really wasn't us, So, that it's funny because that band just took off, and we got a major label record deal and got to tour with Ozzy and Rob Zombie and, all of our bands that we play festivals in Europe with, Metallica and Iron Maiden and stuff. So, all these years later, I was just kind of like, man, I never stopped listening to death metal, but I got that itch to want to play it again. And, my friend Scott, who plays guitar in Embryonic Autopsy, had a bunch of riffs, and he's like, hey, you want to start singing on these? I'm like, man, I don't know if I still have it in me. And I just started belting it out, and it just came back with a vengeance, even heavier than back in the day. So I'm like, all right, my voice has even gotten deeper and lower over the years, so I'm not going to complain about that, and hence Embryonic Autopsy was born.
Oh no, that's absolutely brilliant, mate. Because you've just come off the road with Soil, haven't you?
Yeah, we just finished a U.S. tour a week and a half ago, and 2 days from now I'm hopping on a plane to Warsaw, Poland to start the Embryonic tour. Our first date's at Mystic Festival in Poland.
Oh mate, that is awesome.
Yeah, it's going to be badass. I can't wait. The line we go on right before Unleashed, which is one of my all-time early favorite, death metal bands. So that's going to be a real treat to be on the same stage as Unleashed.
Yeah, man, that's epic. It must be cool going over and doing the European festival scene because, I mean, all the different bands that you'd get to see.
Oh yeah, I mean, there's I could spend the rest of this interview just naming the bands that I want to see on all these festivals. There's just so many good ones. I mean, it's going to be fantastic. I really can't wait.
Oh mate, that's absolutely brilliant. So on a slightly different tangent, your first recollections of music, what was it that first inspired you and made you want to become a musician?
Crazy enough, me and my family used to go to this pizza place every Friday night, and they had a jukebox there, and they had AC/DC Highway to Hell
Nice.
in that jukebox, and I would play that song over and over and over every Friday night. Like, people that were regulars in there or people that work there must have just dreaded when they saw this same kid walking in there, because they knew all they're going to hear is Highway to Hell for half the night. And that was what really got me into, rock music and metal. And from there, it just, got heavier and heavier. I got into like Def Leppard and Quiet Riot. Then, I really fell in love with Motley Crue's Shot at the Devil. It's still my all-time favorite record. And then I discovered like Ozzy Osbourne and Wasp and Judas Priest. And then, as you would, you started looking into heavier stuff, and I really started getting into like Anthrax and Metallica and Slayer and Megadeth. And then after that, I heard, Pantera and then Napalm Death and Obituary and, Deicide and Cannibal Corpse and Death, and just kept getting heavier and heavier from there.
Oh, it's brilliant, eh? I mean, I was sitting there, me and my friend last night, and we're both in our early 50s, and went off and saw Exhumed last night. And it was just sitting in
Man.
the car going, how fucking cool is it to be at 51 and going off to a death metal show?
Oh, it's awesome. That's
That's
awesome.
it, mate. It's something that, you look at a lot of older people and it's like, they're sitting almost in a rest home by now. But, here we are off to a death metal festival. It's cool. Once you're a metalhead for life, eh?
Oh, absolutely. And what's amazing is seeing all these new kids getting into brutal death metal. Like, I have a few friends that have, kids that are 14, 15 years old, and they're embryonic autopsy fans. They're like, oh my God, my son loves your band and this and that. And I'm like, oh my gosh, he's 14 years old and he's, discovering brutal death metal. So this whole new generation has been popping up. It's not just us old fogies listening to it anymore,
Oh, no, it's gross seeing that all the young people with, I mean, it's weird saying all the young people because I don't feel as though I'm that old, really. But at the same time,
Exactly.
it is amazing seeing all these young people at the shows and knowing that, the next generation's gonna have some good fucking influences and stuff. So it's pretty positive for the future. So you touched on it briefly, but your heroes and inspirations, who are some of your favorite people? And I mean, you must have met a few of them.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, as far as like bass playing and stuff, I love John Patitucci from the Chick Corea Electric Band. He's a jazz bass player. Steve DiGiorgio from, Sadus. He was in Death for a while, Testament. Duff McKagan is one of the most unsung bass players out there. Alex Webster from Cannibal. Nikki Sixx, as far as like, idols out there just because of my love of Motley Crue. But as far as like vocalists and death metal vocalists and stuff, my number one go-to has always been David Vincent. I just love the way he's just so commanding, it's just crazy. And Craig from Incantation, that Onward to Golgotha record is still one of my favorites. I mean, his voice on that is just so evil and dark and deep. And I've always loved John Tardy, just the way, I mean, nobody can match that guy's vocals. I've never heard a copycat of John Tardy in my entire life. That guy just has some sort of magical voice that nobody can copy, And, Chris Barnes, I mean, he was the one that he basically started the guttural death metal voice. He's the OG of guttural death metal vocals. And to be going on our second tour, with him and befriend him, and me and him talk all the time, and stuff like that. It's like I up until last year, believe it or not, up until us touring with 6 Feet Under last year, I had never met Chris Barnes in all these years. And just the nicest guy you would ever meet in your life. I mean, he's just the sweetest guy. And we got along with them really, really well, and became instant friends. And that's how, we're going back to Europe with them and stuff like that. So it's just like that was an amazing thing. And Aaron from My Dying Bride, like early My Dying Bride, really inspired me, lyrically and kind of with like the doom and stuff and goth type sound that they incorporated. Same with like early Paradise Lost. I was really like really when in those like early My Dying Bride and Paradise Lost records, I really got into those and like the early Suffocation stuff. So, those are probably, probably my go-tos, as far as like stuff that I, go back and are like, yeah, those are like my favorite, vocalists of all time type people. And Barney from Napalm Death too. I mean,
He's a guy.
Harmony Corruption is a masterpiece. And I know the band kind of thinks of that as like more of like a death metal record and not really, paying homage to their grindcore roots. That's just a masterpiece. Harmony Corruption is one of my favorite death metal records too. So,
Oh, no, that's real cool. So do you have any sort of like warm-ups or rituals or anything that you do before you sing or play bass? I mean, either for performing in the studio or live.
mean, I used to just grab a gallon of chocolate milk and gurgle with that so I could coat my voice to get it, like raspy and gurgly and stuff. Now I actually do some like vocal warm-up exercises just to kind of get the throat going so that I don't throw my voice out or anything. I mean, I'm singing so deep nowadays, with the exception of a few screams that, you don't really need to warm up when you're like loosening your vocal cords the way I do, but in the studio I actually drink a lot of chocolate milk to keep that gurgle going. It's an old trick that Joe from Broken Hope, taught me. And RIP, I love Joe. He was such a great person and such a amazing, front man, the way he commanded an audience. He had a super great voice, but he taught me the chocolate milk trick. So I he'd always call me Little Timmy from Oppressor because I'm 6'4". So he'd always kind of that was his little running joke. If I'd ever come to a Broken Hope show where we were playing a show together, he's like, "This next song goes out to Little Timmy from Oppressor." So I miss that guy. He had a great sense of humor and was a great person and a great front man. So.
Oh, it's always nice to keep their memory alive with cool stories like that. So, thanks for sharing
Absolutely.
that. Well, I've only got time for one more question, and that is words of advice for young musicians.
Words of advice for young musicians, do it, what I've always followed, and it's harder than ever to get noticed out there nowadays. And, it's so easy to take shortcuts and, use sound effects or AI or something like that. The only thing I'd really say is, stay true to your craft. If you play an instrument, work hard at it, practice as much as you possibly can. Don't cheat on it, do the best you can. Don't use the easy way out with, cutting and pasting everything in Pro Tools and stuff like that. Hone in on your craft and, play the best you can and have fun with it. I mean, that's the whole reason we all got into music, is because it's fun and it provokes an emotion. And especially when you're a metalhead or even like into extreme metal, you're part of a special club because, it's not mainstream and it's not for everybody. And, some people look at it or hear it and they're just like, "That's just noise. That's just garbage." But, people like us, we understand that. We know what it's about. We get it. And it's part of being in a special club. So, with that in mind, help out your fellow musicians. Don't sit there and have the rivalries and the wars and try to outdo somebody or, boycott somebody and stuff because you're jealous that they're a little bit further along. Create a good scene together and play with your friends. And that's what I came up in. In the death metal scene in Chicago, we would put shows together with all like-minded bands, and we created this entire scene out here of death metal in Chicago. And it was some of the funnest days I've ever had because we'd play shows with our friends, we'd all support each other, and it was great. That's what being a metalhead's all about, is the camaraderie and the togetherness, and playing your instrument and having fun with it.